Hey there. Welcome to The Unpresentable Parts, your go-to spot for conversations that matter, hosted by Tim Blake and Titus Walelo. We're breaking down barriers and building bridges, one story at a time. Tim and Titus invite you into a space where the vulnerable becomes powerful. Ready to join the conversation? Let's dive in.
Hey, welcome to the Unpresentable Parts podcast. My name is Tim Blake. Again, normally I'd introduce my host, Titus Walelo, but he's unable to join us today. But I do have a guest, Delano Stewart, who I'll intro in just a minute. Today we're going to continue our series on Views from the Valley. And it's based out of Psalm 23, verse 4, where the psalmist writes, "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I will fear no evil." And the whole idea is we spend a good amount of our time in our journey with God and our walk with Christ in the valley. There are challenging times, and that's why there's so many scriptures that talk about the down times and those valley seasons. One of the things that we're going to talk about during the series is mental health. And today, I've got Delano Stewart, who leads the Valley Christian Church in Las Vegas. And personally, he has saved my life, but we'll get back to that. Everybody, Delano Stewart.
Hey, everybody. Tim, thanks for letting me be part of this. You know, we've talked extensively about mental health and how it's impacted both of us. So I'm grateful to be able to share a little bit my view from the valley.
Excellent. So we start off every episode, or we try to, if I remember, ADD, asking the question, what's unpresentable about you today? For me, I'll start. I was feeling great until we started getting ready. Everything was looking good. And then my camera wouldn't work. And then I was frustrated. And then I was like, okay, God, are you like against this? And we prayed. And I was like, amen, God. And God, he opened up a way, and here we are. So that's my unpresentable. I had to work on my faith and my surrender. Delano?
Great. Well, for myself, probably the most unpresentable part right now is a little bit of the angst that I feel concerning my mother's health. Mm. Right now, the decision that's being weighed is whether or not she should go in hospice. So That's a little bit unpresentable, because when I pray for God's will to be done, I don't know what that looks like, but I pray that I'll be okay with it somehow, some way, and maybe in time.
Mm. Amen. I've been praying for your family.
Thank you.
Okay. So we are going to dive in to a little bit of mental health. Now, what I will share is this. Delano and I are not practitioners. We are not therapists. We are not doctors. We are afflicted with depression. We struggle with it. We have experiential knowledge of depression. So please, if you are looking to this, and I don't want to misrepresent what this is, this is two ministers sharing their battle with depression, how they recognized it, some of the tools that are some of the impact that it's had on our lives, on our marriages, children, the struggle in being ministers while also battling with depression, maybe a little bit about being Black men as well, and how this might help you. That's it. Just purely experiential. So if you're coming looking for therapists, this is not it. So please, I want to make sure that we're clear on that. But first, Delano, a little bit about your journey. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in California, Oceanside, California, for 30 years. Then became a disciple in 1993 in the LA church.
Okay. I
spent about 9 years there. Transferred, shipped off, fired, one of those things. To Tallahassee.
Oh, but we're going to get there. But so you became a Christian. Were you in college? Were you a college student?
Yes.
Okay.
I was a 20-year-old college student, a junior in college at Austin.
That's right. And you played football for Austin, right?
I did for a short period of time. After I became a Christian, I stopped playing and actually went into the ministry.
Okay. So you came into paid ministry after that. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So we'll come back to the ministry part in LA, and I'm going to share about Delano's superpower. He has a superpower. Go for it. So you were in Los Angeles in paid ministry, and then you and your wife, Nadine, which we'll come back to, moved to Tallahassee.
Yes, and we were there for 10 years. The first 6 years there, I was an intern or worked with the campus ministry. And then in about 2004, 2005, I wound up leaving the church for a few years. And then in 2008, was officially diagnosed with depression. And I actually burned out of the ministry, and from 2008 to 2012, served as a high school teacher in Georgia, because I lived basically 15 minutes from the Georgia-Florida line.
Okay.
And then in 2012, went back into the ministry here in Las Vegas, and my wife and I co-led for about 3 years, and we've been on our own probably for the last seven and a half years.
So how many years total in paid ministry?
About 27 years.
Ooh. And let's just say maybe the last four have been like dog years, the COVID years.
Correct. those are probably some of the most formative years that we're super grateful for, actually. So.
Oh, amen. Yeah, everybody's experience is a little different, right?
Yeah.
So. Okay, so where did you meet Nadine, your wife?
So we met in Los Angeles in the campus ministry. Basically, for me, it was love at first sight. After our first date in March of 93, I said, I'm going to marry her or nobody else. The Lord did not strike her with blindness at that point. And it wasn't until the next date that she fell in love with me. And then on May 22nd, 1993, we started going steady, and we've been together ever since.
Mm. Now, for our younger viewers, going steady, it sounds a little dated. We dated, but exclusive. They were exclusive in 93. And when did you get married?
We got married on April 22nd of 1995.
Okay, so 95. So, man, you got married. I got married in 2001. You were way, way ahead of me. And so, and you guys have how many children?
We have three children, a 26-year-old son, a 4-year-old daughter, and a 23-year-old son who is also married.
Mm. Okay. Delano, how old are you?
I am 51 years old. That is also an unpresentable part.
No, listen. There's something unpresentable about me right now. You're 51. I'm 54. You got three kids out of the house. I mean, I know.
Yeah.
I've got a senior and a freshman. I'm so far. I'm going to be 57, God willing, when my son graduates. Anyway, enough about me. Okay. So you mentioned that you were actually before the diagnosis of the depression. So Delano and I, we originally met in the paid ministry in Los Angeles, and it was 1999-2000. I came into paid ministry, in essence, February 1, 1999, and that's a whole story. And so that year was one of the most challenging years ever for me. And so then I got moved over to a different part of our ministry in South Central LA, where was a foreign land for both Delano and I.
Correct.
Doing the way we were, we just came from different worlds. In any case, Delano was leading a church. We called them our church, the Los Angeles church, was broken up into regions because it's a massive, massive city. And so it's broken up in regions. Delano led one small church, and I led, at that time, I was just working with singles ministry. And then later, I began to lead a church. But here's the thing. So Delano Stewart, his superpower, integrity. Delano Stewart is a man of integrity. He would not say humility. I will say humility. Because there would be times now. For those of you that are not familiar with our fellowship and the International Church of Christ, let's just say our dynamics were a little weird in the era of 2000, 2001. And so Delano would stand up in the middle of a staff meeting. He would raise his hand respectfully and say, "This doesn't make sense. Something's not right. There's something a little bit off." And he was 100% correct. And that's why he got shipped off to Tallahassee. And I think they were like, "Oh, we got something great for you, bro. We got something really cool." And they shook him to the panhandle from Los Angeles to the panhandle of Florida. To that great place. Basically. Which, yes. Again, God worked it out, right?
He did.
Okay, so you mentioned you were formally diagnosed with depression in what year? 2008. Okay. What led you to even get diagnosed?
Well, probably the patterns in my marriage had my wife and I, we just had dynamics that we could not figure out. When we were in the ministry in Los Angeles, we were running around so much, we never dealt with things in our marriage to the depth that they needed to be dealt with. When we were, I believe God moved us to Tallahassee. I know I say a lot of things, but ultimately God moved us to Tallahassee, Florida, where it was 1/10 the speed of Los Angeles. Ministry, life, etc. Mm-hmm. We had three small children, and all the things that we neglected, avoided, did not deal with in Los Angeles, we were forced to deal with in Tallahassee, Florida. Mm. And so basically when we started doing the deep dive into ourselves individually and into our marriage, we discovered patterns that we did not have answers for. And a couple, Kevin and Rosemary Younger, got in there, and I really believe God used them to save our marriage in so many ways. Mm. And he's still one of my best friends today. They basically said, "We cannot help you. You need to go get professional help." And at that time, in about 2007, 2008, there was still a big stigma about having to go get outside help. Mm. Now, my wife and I, we purposely made the choice not to see Christian counseling because we felt like we had gotten a lot of that within our congregation. So we went out to a secular counselor who was not influenced by maybe by what we believed. And basically through a series of questions and sessions, it was teased out that not only was I depressed, but I also had ADD, which explained so much about myself that I really never understood. And so basically we sat down with the counselor or therapist said, "What do you guys need?" I said, "Nadine has her stuff. I have my stuff. And then we have our stuff. I need to know what my stuff is, my issues. She needs to know what her issues are. And then we need to understand what our issues are together and how our individual issues exacerbate the other person's issues. And that was basically our first sit down. And I remember the counselor remarking, he said, "I have never had a couple sit down and be able to basically articulate to that degree what they were seeking in counseling." And so what was found out is I did have depression, and my pattern was weeks to months of going into my cave where I would just be in my own head. And my wife, she dealt with her issues, and part of her issues was dealt with abandonment. And so periodically I would abandon my wife. I would be emotionally unavailable to my wife. And just like many people, hurt doesn't stay hurt. It usually turns to anger, resentment, etc.
Bitterness.
And so we had this pattern. I'd go away. She would try to chase me. I would shoo her away because I needed to figure this out. I did not know what I was going through. And so that would last for weeks and sometimes months. And then I would come out to a wife that was hurt and angry. And I did not know why. And so basically that pattern just kept going on and off. And then it also impacted my children as well. I was not, the biggest thing is I just was emotionally unavailable. And so the epitome of it was my wife and I would spend a couple of hours together doing whatever. And then she would say maybe the next day, "Man, we really need to spend time together." And I would remark, "We just spent hours together. That doesn't make any sense." In the counseling session, the counselor asked one question that kind of opened up my horizons. He says, "Okay, when you are with your wife, are you there mentally?" And this is literally what I said to him. I said, "No, but I'm not there mentally with anybody," because I would always tell my wife, "Don't take it personal. I'm like this with everybody." And so
like that makes it all better.
Yeah. And you know, I would tell her, "Don't take it personally. I'm just this way with everybody."
Yeah.
I'm in an appointment. I'm 30% there, 70% doing other stuff in my mind. And so right then and there, I realized that has been the problem, is there's just been emotional unavailability. And then I began to describe just a little bit about myself more to the counselor. And I remember it's about 9 years old, where one Christmas, I felt like the color got drained out of life. And Christmas used to be such a celebratory time, such a time of certain smells and scenery and colors. And literally one day as a kid, it just was black and white. And when I describe my times of depression during that time, would be like if you had a fire and you got a wool blanket and you soaked it in water and then you threw it over the fire, and it would just slowly suffocate that fire. There'd be lots of smoke. There'd still be some heat, but literally that fire could not breathe. And that's what it felt like when I would go through my depressive episodes. I just had to figure out, how do I survive the next day? And not deal with all the other stuff. Mind you, I'm in the ministry during this time. And this is not a badge of honor by any stretch of the imagination. It's probably just my ilk and bent towards overachievement and being a workaholic is I've never, ever have woken up, even though I felt all these things, and not performed what I needed to perform. You know, quote unquote, the performance was over, there was only one person I felt absolutely safe around to let down in the performance, and to let down my guard and to take off my, and that was my wife. And so because of that, she suffered the brunt of the emotional unavailability, because she was the only safe place I could find in the world to be who I really was during my times of depression. And so that's what took the toll on the marriage.
Mm. And so, and I was going to ask you about that. I'm glad you mentioned that. And I do want to come back to the marriage piece, but the performance, because obviously you said 9 years old is when you can first recall this beginning, right? The Christmas, the color being drained out of life. But you performed high school. You went to college. You were an athlete the entire time. And so and then coming to paid ministry. And if you're not familiar with our fellowship, or if you're familiar only with recent history, kind of the is an archetype, like the type of minister that you were supposed to be, is everyone needed to be a type A, right?
Correct.
It was type A, the mission first, ministry had to get done, and you literally had to find facilities, preach a different sermon every week, you name it, study the Bible with people, do counseling with people, you're constantly going and going and going. And the whole idea was, if you are feeling down, it's because you're focused on yourself. You need to be about the mission. And so, and I'll speak to my experience, but it's very easy the way our culture was, especially in Los Angeles. Los Angeles, even outside of church, is a busy place. But in the church, we adopted that same culture. So you're going and going and going. And I had a very similar experience, which I'll get to. But it was very easy to be a functional depressive.
Correct.
And I want to clarify, I know what you meant, but I just for everyone else, when you said you would go into your cave for a month or whatever amount of time, you didn't physically leave. You were physically always home, but emotionally
absent. Correct.
Okay.
And I would come out to work, to do what I needed to do, and then I'd go back into my cave.
Which was is extremely hurtful for your wife. Because she's like, I think about this, I don't know if you've seen it, there's an interview with Nikki Giovanni and James Baldwin. And she says, she in essence, she says, regarding culture and African-American male and female relationships, and she says, I get the brunt of all of your bad stuff. And he says, everybody likes you at work. He goes, could you smile in the white man's face? And they love you. But when you come home, I get the brunt of everything. And he says, well, I can't lie to you. And she says, no, you must. Lie to me. I need the best of you. I don't need all of the pain and suffering. And so in a similar way, like our spouses would see us, perform for everyone else, but not for them.
Correct.
And that...
And that is shame. It was very shame. It's very shameful.
And I share that not to shame you. I've had a very similar experience. You and your wife sat with Sam and I, my wife, in Orlando, and I wanted to sit with you because I wanted to see from Nadine's perspective. I was like, whoa. And man, it was triggering for my wife, and I understood the depth of what my wife experienced with me. But in any case, and we'll come back to that. So for you, Delano, you began to have these revelations that, oh, this is what's been happening. This is my pattern. These are the things that are occurring with me. Now you're seeing the impact on your wife. What gave you the strength? Because I know when you're doing this work, right, it's painful because you got to look back and see all the damage that you've done to your wife, your children, yourself. What gave you the strength to do the work and to push through?
During the time before I burned out of the ministry?
Yeah. Or okay. Even during that burnout period, like, you've had to work through that.
Correct. So what kept me going, what kept me getting out of bed, ultimately was my relationship with God. So I knew that God loved me. I didn't understand everything that was going on, but I knew that he had a calling for my life. And that calling was something that drove me. So I'm very driven by accomplishments. So let's put it that way. I'm very driven by accomplishment, very competitive, all these things. And so in LA, I'll be honest with you, it was like I did not want to fall behind. Mm-hmm. Right. And to be honest, I was not comfortable in my own skin. So I tried to be something that I thought everybody wanted me to be. And so when God delivered me from that kind of culture and brought me to Tallahassee, it changed because I started to really understand who I was in God and in my personality versus who I thought everyone wanted me to be. So in Tallahassee began the process before 2008, where I stepped out of the ministry because I just got burnt out. It started the process of being comfortable in my own skin. Mm. And I remember sitting down in a conversation. This is maybe about a year before going to Tallahassee while I was in Los Angeles, having a conversation with a brother. And I said, I'm just not cut out for paid ministry. And he said, I don't think that's correct. I think you just have not found a ministry that you fit in. So I would always see myself as a square peg trying to fit into a round hole.
Mm.
And when it came to ministry, and I was not type A by any stretch of imagination. But when he said that, he said, you just haven't found a church that you fit into yet. And so when I got to Tallahassee, I started really thinking about that. And I realized that God was taking me on a journey for me to be comfortable in my own skin, to be comfortable with the way he created me, warts and all. In 2008, when I got diagnosed with the depression, ADD, a lot of stuff started making sense. And I remember sitting with the counselor, and he says, do you like your job? And I said, yes, I like my job. He says, okay, if you had to put a percentage on it, how much of... But I don't like everything about my job. I remember saying that. And he says, well, what would be the percentage of like to dislike? And I said, I like 20% of my job and I don't like 80% of my job.
Mm-hmm.
And he simply asked me a question. If one of your members came to you and said that exact same thing, what would you tell them? I said, I would tell them to get a different job.
Mm.
And so it was about a week or two right after that, I went before the church in Tallahassee, and the church in Tallahassee, I loved that church. But I told my wife about a week before doing this, stepping down, I said, I am exhausted working from weakness. Mm. I said, I need to do something where I can work from the strengths that I have. Mm. I said, I cannot keep working from weakness. And so I went before the church and simply said, I love you. I cannot give you what I believe the church needs. And I cannot, in a clear conscience, take another paycheck from you. So I am resigning from leading the church. And thank God, Anthony Battle was there. We were co-leading at the time.
AB.
And I said, I cannot take another check. And so as of today, I am resigning, because I have nothing more to give to the church.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to stay because I love this church.
Mm.
And the church was so gracious. They actually threw me a going away party and I wasn't going anywhere. and so it was a great ending. And basically God, in that next 4 years, I went into teaching, as that's a strength of mine. And so for the next 4 years, God allowed me to do a job that I was very strong in, where I could almost hide my weaknesses and just work from strength. But in that process, Tim, what God helped me to see is this is who you are. And you cannot do ministry and you cannot do life just working from weakness the whole time. You've got to be comfortable with who you are, your strengths and your weaknesses. And so I remember I was not happy teaching because I was in those 4 years, I prayed daily, like, God, what am I passionate about? What am I passionate about? What am I passionate about? And God made it clear I was passionate about serving in ministry, not necessarily paid.
Yeah.
Because from the day I stepped out, I never quite stopped serving. I set up a Sunday school program. I set up all these things. And actually, it got to a point where the minister sat me down and said, okay, you are doing so much for the church. We want to pay you something. And I said, well, I stepped out of that. But I never stopped serving because, Tim, I had to answer one question. Do I do what I do for a paycheck or do I do what I do for the Lord?
Bro, facts.
I never could answer that. I could never answer that question while I was in the paid ministry because I went in the paid ministry at about 20, 21 years old. And now at 2008, that would have put me at 36. I finally answered the question. I do it because I love God and I love people. Yep. And when that question was answered, and I understood that that was my passion, literally meaning I would do that job for free, I told my wife, I said, I'd like to go back in the ministry at some point. And I was determined to do ministry very differently, where I would maximize my strengths and surround myself with people that where my weaknesses would be a liability. I would surround myself with people where those are their strengths. And I tried that in Tallahassee, and it worked a little bit in Tallahassee. But again, I was so far burnt out that I couldn't recover.
Yeah.
But I made that determination. And when the opportunity to come back to the ministry in Los Angeles came about, I remember thinking to myself, I will not go into the ministry, paid ministry, trying to be something that I'm not. When they interviewed me, this is basically what I told them. I said, I'm a one-trick pony. I said, I love to preach God's word. I love to serve. I battle with depression. I am not good at, and I listed off about 10 or 15 things. And I said, I love God. I will call people to God, point people to Jesus. I'm not good at all these things. I will probably never be good at any of those things. So if you hire me, you're hiring someone basically that is very broken, but loves God and will call others to love God as well. I said, don't hire me for what you think I can become. Don't hire me for what you hope I will learn. I said, what you see is what you get. So if you hire me for what you see, not what you hope you will see, you know, because I may never change. And I left the interview thinking, yeah, I surely will not get a job. And they hired me and my wife. And I remember thinking to myself, this is another opportunity, but this is an opportunity for me to be who God created me to be. And I'm a leader that believes in charging the hill, but you charge the hill with people, not by yourself, and just hope people follow you, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, I can't be attached to the outcomes. I have to be attached to the process. And if I love the outcome more than I love the people, then I am in the wrong job. I'm in the wrong profession.
Yeah.
And so it's been a great journey. One of the things in Tallahassee that God really established was my three-legged stool.
Okay.
Holds my faith. And number one, I had to get convinced that God is sovereign. In my life, he is sovereign.
Yeah.
Meaning man doesn't control my future. Man didn't, you know, fire me and send me to Tallahassee. God did that.
Yeah.
So that was the very first thing I had to establish is I cannot be bitter towards men. I must be grateful to God that he's sovereign. But number two is that I am his son. And therefore, if I'm his son, that means everything that happens in my life is for my best interest. Mm. That was a hard one to swallow because on the surface, there were a lot of things where I felt like people harmed me, people hurt me, people, you know, double-crossed me, etc. But I was willing to hold on to that second stool leg that everything happens for my benefit because God is my father. The third thing was believing that my greatest good, my greatest benefit, my greatest accomplishment in my life is to be conformed to the likeness of Christ. Romans chapter 8, verse 28 and 29, mm-hmm. right? All things work together for the good. And those who God called, he called to be conformed to the likeness of his son. So with those three, with those three legs, I realized that everything happens in my life for one reason. And that's for me to become more and more like Christ.
Mm.
And therefore, I can't think of things as good or bad necessarily just in those merits. I have to think if something is bad, what is it that I'm supposed to learn to become more like Christ?
Mm.
Because.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I don't want to lose this. So if we go back. You're talking about the three-legged stool, God's sovereignty, you're his son. One of the things I realized scripturally is that if God is sovereign, then he built in your circumstances. The family we're raised in, Acts 17, times and places, all that. Psalm 139, we are his. He knit us together in our mother's womb, as the psalmist said. But that includes our weaknesses. And so that depression, like God allowed you to have that. Miller even built it into you to get you back right to him. And there are two scriptures, Romans 8, you mentioned Romans 8, and it talks about the creation being subjected to frustration. And 2 Corinthians 5, Paul mentions the same thing. Like, there's a planned obsolescence and planned weakness in us in the flesh so that we cry out for our Father. And I know for myself, I joke around all the time. And I'll tell you another thing about Delano. Delano's got, I call him Beast privately. He don't even know this. Beast from the Bible where, you know, he's the professor. He's super smart, but he also is a beast. Delano, he works out. His chest is huge. Now, I, in all humility, at 54 years old, I can lift 400 pounds off my chest, but my chest don't grow. I've done every kind of push-up, everything. It won't grow. God won't allow it. Because if God gave me the ability to have had a higher metabolism, and if my chest could grow, I would probably try to preach in a sport coat with no shirt. I'm getting very heavy. And so, but God, he builds these things into us. And I think that, and I don't know if you went this place in your journey, Delano, but did you ever struggle with bitterness? Like, God, why did you give me this? Why do I have this? Why can't I just be normal?
Yeah, and that was in the process of forming that three-legged stool because mm-hmm. I did. I remember thinking to myself, and this was a point in contention in my marriage about whether or not I should go on medication for my ADD and for my depression.
I want to get to that.
In my mind, I was like, I'm not going to be a pill pusher for the rest of my life, a pill popper for the rest of my life.
Right.
You know, that's weakness. That's the being dependent on some. That's a lack of faith. That's a lack of this.
Yes.
And I remember, again, Kevin. And so my wife was like, why won't you go on medication if it can help? Mm. Now, mind you, this is my wife who has been hurt by the patterns and depression and ADD and everything that it brought on. And she's like, why wouldn't you get help if it's available? And my response was, because I don't want to be a pill popper. So I went to a men's retreat, and a brother shared, who recently went through a divorce, and he was married for 30 some years, and he secretly battled alcoholism, and his wife eventually divorced him. And he looked at the brothers. He says, if you don't think your wife will, you know, won't divorce you because she's a disciple and you're a disciple and she's just going to bear with it, think again. It can happen to you. And my friend Kevin was at that same retreat, and he said, Delano, if God has made you this way, who are you to talk to your maker and act and complain, basically? And he says, if the medication can help, why wouldn't you take it? And I told him the very same thing I told my wife, because I stopped. And I said, wow, it's about me. And I thought about it, and there was, I think it's 2 Corinthians chapter 12, I believe, where Paul talks about the thorn.
Could be wrong,
but I think it's 12. And so when he complained to God, God was like, Jesus was like, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. And bro, it was like a lightning bolt. I was like, that's it. That is the missing piece that makes this whole stool work.
Yes,
the stool works because of God's grace, God's power made perfect in weakness. And after that, I remember, like, couldn't wait to get home to tell my wife that I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get the help that I need. I'll take medication. I'll do whatever. You know, it doesn't matter, because it's not about me. It's about God's glory. It's about God's grace. It's about God's power, I share about it when I preach, and I remember the first time I shared about it, bro, I had a line of people coming, and I talk about the medication, the fear of medication, that it's a lack of faith and all that stuff. You don't believe in the power of God. Da, 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 da. And I remember I shared that battle with over the pulpit. And there were a line of people wanting to talk to me because they wanted to do two things. They wanted to ask me a little bit more about my journey. But then the second thing is they wanted to thank me for finally talking about depression and medication and the struggle and the stigma and the shame that can also often be associated with it. And I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, that's right. I never heard anyone talk about depression, you know, outside of it being sinful, outside of it being selfish, outside of it being something
ungrateful,
super negative. Yeah, super, super negative. And, you know, just a full disclosure is, when I was 5 years old, I got into a very bad accident with head injury. And I've played football, and I've had several concussions. So when I was going through everything, some of it was, we're not sure if it's caused by head injury or if it's runs in the family, because I don't know anyone in my family that battles with depression, which was another frustrating thing. It's like, why me? But at the end of the day, Tim, after I understood that the whole three-legged stool is wrapped in God's grace, I was like, God, man, I'm comfortable with who I am. I'm comfortable with my struggles. I'm not content in the sense of, like, I don't struggle and I don't battle. I'm not striving to get better. I'm not striving to do silence and solitude, meditation, things to help me when I go through my depressive episodes. But it's part of my makeup. And I do believe that God's grace is sufficient. His power is made perfect in weakness. And, you know, I tell people I take medication, and it's kind of funny. And I don't know. I mean, some people might be offended by this, but I'll talk to, what do you take? Oh, I take this. What do you take? How many milligrams? You know, we're kind of comparing our medications. But at the end of the day, I don't put my faith in the medication. I put my faith in Jesus that's going to allow this medication to work. You know,
exactly.
I'll never forget the first time I took medication. This was back when my kids were young, and my daughter, she was about 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
No, she was about like 6, and she asked if I would read her a book, and I said, "Sure, honey." Now, typically, I'm reading the book and I'm thinking about all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not emotionally available to my daughter. And I remember I sat down, and for the first time in my life, I read a book to my children or to my daughter, mm-hmm. and I was actually enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a little bit later that afternoon, everybody went out to go to, I think, to go to the store, and it was just me in the house. And for the first time ever in, at that point, I think it was about 36, 37 years, and this mm-hmm. was on my medication, it was quiet. It was quiet in my head.
Mm.
It was quiet in my house. And it was quiet in my soul.
Mm.
And after that, I was like, "Lord, I don't know what's in that stuff, but if this is what normal people go through, if this is how silent it is in normal, I've been quoted.
Yeah.
I need this, because for 37 years, or as far as I can remember, all I ever heard was noise.
Mm.
And I felt like, again, I don't feel like the medication cures me.
Yeah.
I just feel like it helps me be in a place to be better positioned to hear things, you know, whether it be from God, from people, from whatever. And I don't want to sound all mystical, but
yeah.
It really puts me in a better place where I can listen and I can hear and I can deal and operate, again, not from a bunch of noise and weakness, but I feel like it gives me an upper hand to deal with what's there and to be emotionally available. You know, it's been super helpful. And I know we've talked about it, you and I.
And that's, I want to share a little bit what you shared. And if you were watching or listening, when I said earlier, Delano he's helped save my life. He really has. And, I identify so much with your story. I did not know that I battled depression until 2005. And so we had come out of paid ministry in Los Angeles. And so similarly, although we didn't get sick, we moved to Orlando, and my wife was teaching. I don't even know what I was doing, some real estate stuff, but things were great. A great house, no debt, money in the bank. We were serving, to your point, we came out of paid ministry, but I was working with the singles ministry there and then also a young marriage group. But my wife, she, one day, again, we didn't have any children, and she says, "Tim," she goes, "every year that we've been married, it seems you've gotten more and more depressed." I don't think she got the correlation. But anyway, just joking. I didn't get depressed because I was married. But anyway, but she saw something that nobody else saw. And so I went to Brother Monty Drenner, who was there in Orlando, who had been in paid ministry and became a counselor. And the way he described it to me, Delano, and he went through my whole history, I tried to commit suicide in fifth grade. I took a bunch of prescription pills and just got sick. And then also right before, a week before I first came to church, I was about to take my life because I felt empty. I felt like there's nothing else. Like, what are we doing? If I'm going to die anyway, let's just do it now. And God intervened. That's a whole story. But I didn't, as he went through my history and we talked through kind of all the ups and downs, even as a Christian, he said, "Tim, normal people, their mood levels are here. And if you're listening on the podcast, it's basically you've got a baseline. And then when they get depressed, let's say they go 5 clicks below their baseline, and I may be messing this up, but I'm just describing it as I remember it. They go 5 clicks below their baseline. He says, your baseline is where everybody else goes when they get depressed. And then when you get depressed, you go, basically, you go from the basement beneath the foundation. And that's where your struggles are. And so he went through, when do you feel best? And it was when I was working out and I went through all this. We went through all the different scenarios. When do I feel best? When am I the most up? And when do these periods of depression hit? So once he explained it to me, I was like, to your point, what you experienced, you're like, oh, that's what this was. Like my whole life, that's what this, I just thought I liked sad things. I'd be a little melancholy. But, you know, and even after becoming a Christian, one of the, you know, I became a Christian in 1989 in our campus ministry. And at that time, everybody was like, get fired up, be fired up, go, 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 go. And I am not an A personality, A minus B plus maybe, right, on a good day. And so, but I fit in my middle, I perform, right? I play sports, you perform. I'm doing all the stuff. But over time, the impact that it had on me, I walked away from God twice, and kind of looking back, I realized, oh, I was depressed because I did not want to go back to another life in the world. I did not, I understood the Bible. I believed God. It wasn't a faith in God or a belief issue, but I was depressed, and I felt like, but in essence, I spiritually try to commit suicide. You spiritually just do things and should be like, because I felt like I didn't fit in. Everybody's happy. Everybody's normal. I'm the weird one. And I didn't know how to talk about it. And didn't, to your point, the answers whenever you were down were, you need to go share your faith with more people. Be about the mission. Write a gratitude list. I used to write 100 things a day for like 7 days to get me out of my funk. And it wasn't until I sat down that I finally understood. And that got me to a place where I was like, oh, okay, now I know what's happening. So to your point, like when you described the wool blanket being put over the fire, for me, I would go and I would just lose, like nothing would bring me joy. Food, intimacy with my wife, music, the gym. I would do everything, but nothing was bringing me joy. And what it helped me to identify was like, oh, that's what's happening. I'm in a depressive state right now. I'm in a depressive mood right now. And so I was able to function for a while, but as kind of the stresses of paid ministry and all that stuff came on, I remember you and I were in Panama, I think in 2019.
Yep.
In the fall of 2019, we're in Panama, and it was you, myself, and another brother. I don't know if you want me to say his name anyway. Yeah. We were in...
Sorry.
It's all good. We're in Panama. Brother War, we love you. We know. Anyway, so we're there and we're sitting at the table and I had been going through some things. I couldn't realize like I would have these bouts of struggles with purity temptations, all this kind of stuff. And I hadn't shared. And we were just talking. And you started sharing your journey. And you started sharing about what you were experiencing in the depression. And then Kip starts laughing. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my gosh, you too? And then Kip's laughing because he's experienced that too. His name's Kip Ward, not the Kip you may be thinking of anyway, our brother. So anyway, he's laughing and I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my gosh, this makes so much more sense. And, you know, you shared about medication. I met another brother, actually a couple of years before in 2016, another evangelist, and he shared that he had been on medication. But for me, I was like, listen, as long as I know what's happening, I don't need to take any medication. I understand. And as long as I can monitor my depressive moods, I'll be all right. And as time had gone on, I was managing. But I think there's something that triggered me in 2021, just tons of ministry stress. You and I, we sat in Orlando, and you shared in 2022, you shared that story. Nadine shared what she felt. And when I say they kept it real, Delano and Nadine, if anything, they are real. Got me triggered my wife because it triggered her pain. And what she had experienced for years dealing with me, the absentee, like she would see me, anybody in the ministry, if they need to talk, I'm there. If she needed to talk, I'm too tired. I'm down. Can we wait? I didn't have anything for her. And I gave everything to everyone else. But that was kind of, the way I was dealing with my depression. And remember you shared, like, you should get on medication. You should consider it. Go see someone. Consider it. And I'm like, nah, to your point, I just felt like I've seen people go up and down on medication. So for me, it wasn't I don't need that. I've been taking a statin, I don't know, since my early 30s. I've had cholesterol issues, genetic. I don't mind pills. I'll take pills all day. But that I'd seen people battle with the not getting the right medication, weight gain, no sex drive for the Mary Brothers, you know, all the stuff. I'd seen it all. And I was resistant because I was like, I don't want to go through that. I don't have the strength to kind of find my way through a right dosage, right medication, all that stuff. And a buddy of mine, one of my best friends, Chris Tolbert, he shared with me, he just shared with me something, a struggle. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. So I made my appointment with my doctor, shared kind of here's what's going on. And she got me on a dosage. I think you and I are on a similar medication, antidepressant. You may be on a different one now, but in any case, started taking it. And what I will say is, like my wife said, you're different. Like you're a lot more even. And she was used to me. We'd drive, and I'd be fine with the shyness. To your point, when you left the house or when everyone left your house and it was just quiet and you were like, you were good with it. I think what's happened with me is I've been more comfortable with the silence. And my wife knows that there's more of a peace. I'm not battling to try to be at peace, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has been helpful. And, you know, obviously, I've sat with a couple counselors, exercise, diet, all the normal things in life that are good to keep yourself healthy, which I know you do. But also, the spiritual part for me is God has brought me through so much. And if I can, really quickly, you shared when you interviewed with Valley Christian in Vegas. When I interviewed here, after being out of ministry for 4 years, which was transformative for me, coming out of ministry allowed me to do counseling, allowed me to focus on myself and really get my own voice versus trying to be someone else's voice. And I come to interview in Connecticut, and I preach for a lesson interview. That's kind of the way we did it. We did interview lessons. But I shared all. I walked away from God twice. Tried to take my life, but I love God. Mm-hmm. And I remember the Bible said, I've never heard anybody share that they walked away from God and all my other junk. But to your point, I was like, I'm good. I'm comfortable. I felt free, you know, dealing with who I really am and the way that I'm made. There's a freedom in that. And the reason I wanted to interview Delano, because you helped save me. You've talked to me, I remember recently, about maybe a year and a half ago. And Delano, if you don't know, and I'll talk about God's sovereignty, but Delano called me out of the blue. And I picked up the phone. And it was the middle of a depressive period. I was extremely stressed. And as a minister, a disciple of Jesus, who leads people, who's got a family, I've got a great life. But I got into a place where I was thinking maybe it would be better if I wasn't here. If everybody would be better without me. And the thought wasn't challenging, but I was embarrassed to vocalize it. I was embarrassed and ashamed that I would feel that. But Delano, to your point, as I thought about God's sovereignty and God moving you from LA to to Tallahassee, he brought you to a place where he could take care of you. He brought you to an incubator. And I feel the same here in Hartford, where God brought me to a place where I could serve in paid ministry, but also that I could deal with this stuff. And he's surrounded me with people, you, another brother, Sajan, my best friend, Dave. He surrounded me with a group of people, to your point, like I can be fully me in my weakness. They're able to see it. And that just gives me the space for God to work it through with me. And so I share all that because you've been such a valuable friend. And the Spirit always works. Because there's times when I'm like, I'm going through it, and you just call me out of blue, and I know I've called you. At times, I just like, let me text the line up.
Absolutely.
And then we're like, I'm glad you called. Another time where I was at dropping my kids off at Magic Mountain or at Six Flags, and you called, and I was like, God, how does this always happen? You put the lotto in my life. We were in LA, we never talked, and now we talk more than ever.
That's so true.
So, and it become like friends, like brothers. So Delano, so you had your stool, God's sovereignty, God is your son. And the third one again?
Is that my greatest good that God has in mind for me is to become like Jesus.
Become like Jesus, the fullness of Christ.
Correct.
Yeah.
So everything that happens is there to help me become more like Jesus.
Yeah. There is another component, and I don't think we're going to have time. Delano, if I can ask you to come back for another portion of a series, because Delano and I connect on many levels. Delano is half African-American, half Filipino, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I'm all black, but we also connected in 2020 during COVID, but also during the George Floyd. It was called a racial awakening for the United States. And a group of ministers, Delano helped put that together along with Floyd Rossett. Just a group of black evangelists within our fellowship that were able to talk about some of the things that we were navigating at the time. And so if you will, Delano, another time I would like to talk about kind of culturally, there's a cultural dynamic to also dealing with mental health while being in the ministry. And then just the impact of, you know, we are in the minority in our country, leading a multicultural church.
Correct.
And I would like, if you're willing, I'd like to get some time where we could talk about walking that tightrope.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Maybe we could do a panel. That'd be great.
That'd be even greater.
That might be good. And there may be a time, maybe you and I and our wives could get on and talk a little bit about the impact our depression has had on them and how they've had to navigate it. I haven't asked, but anyway, that might be a possibility too.
Oh, yeah.
Any closing thoughts?
Yeah. First of all, I just want to thank you for, just this space and this time. I think it's needed. I think for all the husbands out there that are listening to this, and even the wives that are listening to this, I'll speak for myself. I cannot use and will not and refuse to use my depression as an excuse for being a bad husband.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no excuse for that. And I know that it's in my sinful nature, I can want to say, well, it's because I struggle with this that I am that.
Mm.
And because my faith is everything is there to help me be like Christ. Therefore, when I'm not being the husband that I'm supposed to be, it's not because, oh, I'm a victim of depression. It's because I'm not fighting to be like Christ. And so I just wanted to make that, because as they're going through it, I'm like, man, there's some things that depression has nothing to do with it. I could just be a bonehead and I just love my wife better. Because I don't go around depressed 100% of the time, you know? And so when I'm not depressed and I am emotionally available, I always have to be aware, am I connecting with my wife? Am I spending time with my wife? Am I giving to my wife what I believe she deserves? And if the answer is no, that's on me. And so I know that's probably a whole other podcast, but I just wanted to say that because I never want to come across as this quote unquote blessing that God has put in my life, where his grace is made perfect and his power is made perfect in weakness, as an excuse for sin, as an excuse for something else. Because it's not, you know, I think it's an opportunity, as in everything that God brings into our life, it's an opportunity for God to be glorified. And when I have my Jesus lens on, and when I'm really close to God, and I just see everything, every challenge, as an opportunity to bring God glory, his power, his grace, his mercy, and the fact that he's lavished us with love, that we should be called his children. I mean, there's nothing that we have done to earn it, deserve it, but it's just his grace and his mercy that I'm alive today, and that I have the awesome wife that I have and the awesome kids that I have. It's all his grace. It's all his mercy. So that's my closing thoughts.
Thank you. And I'm grateful you said that, because every struggle we have to lay it on the altar, and we have to submit it to the lordship of Jesus. Because to your point, if I'm angry, I don't lash out at people in the congregation, but I may do that with my kids. So that's a choice. And so I've got to, even in my struggle, and I'm so grateful you said that, even in my struggle, I do have a choice on where to submit that. And no matter how hard it is, and I do it all the time. And so, and I've had to learn, to your point, God first, wife, you know, right there, kids, everybody else. And I flipped that around a lot, but I appreciate that. It's humbling. Well, Delano, thank you, my brother. We were talking good. We'll talk a little bit about being Black and being Black and Filipino and lead a multicultural church and all those dynamics and our different experiences there. But I'm really, really grateful. And I do want to say I love you. You're a good dude. I
love you too, bro.
You are an amazing, amazing dude. And so I'm really grateful that we had this time. And I'm grateful that everybody that's been able to listen and been able to watch, you've been able to share this time with us. We will continue our Views from the Valley series as part of the Unpresentable Parts podcast. Again, you can go to our website, www.unpresentablepartspod.com. Anyway, you can email us. You can see our link on the site, but you can email us if you've got questions or comments at unpresentablepartspod@gmail.com. Thanks so much for the time. Thanks for joining us. Until another time.
Thanks.
Thanks.